The opinions voiced in this podcast are for general information only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual. To determine which strategies or investments may be suitable for you, consult the appropriate qualified professional prior to making a decision. Individual tax matters should be discussed with your tax professional. I'm Hank Stoltz, and this is the podcast of A Clear Path Financial Partners. The president of A Clear Path Financial Partners, Ryan Kittredge, live here in the studio with us. And Ryan, we want to talk today about tax flexibility in retirement and just what that means as people prepare for taxes, some of the different things that people are going to need to be able to do to have that tax flexibility in retirement. Thank you for being here to talk about this.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me as always, Hank.
So when you're talking about tax flexibility to your clients as they come in and they're looking at retirement or they're in retirement, what do you mean by that and what are you saying to them?
Yeah, great question, Hank. You know, I think with retirement planning, taxes are certainly a big factor, but I think it usually comes after the primary goals of replacing their income. You know, that they gave up when they left their job, they no longer have the paycheck, and they want to make sure they're replacing either all or a portion of that income so that they can keep their standard of living. And then they tend to think about, well, I want to make sure I get sustainable income, but I also want to, you know, at least preserve, if not continue to grow their assets through retirement. But then the tax piece really comes into the equation and the idea of controlling taxes. And I think the kind of the first initial gut response, or at least the way we've been conditioned, most of us, is in terms of controlling taxes, is to pay as little as possible in a given year. But we really think that's a little bit sort of too zoomed in and can really leave some money on the table long run if really the goal is to always, you know, deduct, defer, and really like continue to, you know, avoid the taxes. In a lot of cases, Hank, they're really unavoidable. So in some cases, by paying less today, you may be sort of snowballing up the future tax liability, which could be at a higher tax rate, could be at, you know, a point when income is higher later in retirement.
Interesting. Death and taxes, the only sure things, right? Can I defer, deduct until I shuffle off this mortal coil?
Exactly.
But that could be, we'd stick around for a long time now. That's for sure. People in their 90s, people who are 100 plus. So drill down a little bit more on that for us then. So, because you're right, it is counterintuitive. So maybe I don't want to take all the deductions in a given year?
Yeah, you know, I think in terms of deductions, itemized deductions, or if you're taking the standard deduction, that's great to drive down income through deductions and tax credits. But when it comes to where you're putting aside money, the pure answer, you know, or the complete answer isn't always, you know, pre-tax retirement, right? Because, you know, the 401k plan, 403Bs, 457s, depending on nonprofit, governmental, these qualified pre-tax deductible retirement plans were really, you know, as pensions started to go away, really the crux of a typical retirement. But what we found is that a lot of clients who got that advice 20, 30 plus years ago, maybe from a financial advisor, maybe from their CPA or tax preparer, they've done that, and those people that everything, let's say, is in a 401k or pre-tax IRA, they're a little bit hamstrung and restricted on flexibility in retirement, because at that point, great, they got tax breaks during their working years, but now in those cases, every dollar that they ever need for income is fully taxed at the highest ordinary income, you know, bracket that they're in. So there are things you can do while you're still working, and then, you know, strategies once you're in retirement for mitigating that, you know, basically giving some flexibility for the future. And it's not always by taking every deferral and deduction you can.
All right. Well, let's start then with we're preparing to retire and some of the things that we should be doing then with our taxes to give us some of that flexibility. Do I need to, I would assume I need to look not only at the ordinary income that I have coming in, but also if there are other revenue streams that I have or where my savings is?
And so, you know, when it comes to sort of, I guess, we'll go into the taxation on the way out of different types of accounts, but there's really three main kind of tax buckets. So there's tax deferred accounts like a traditional IRA or 401k where you get the upfront deduction, and then there's a deferral, meaning it grows over time without the taxes due at that point. But every dollar, both of your contribution plus all of the earnings, when you do take them out, comes out as ordinary income, which is really at the highest tax rate based on your bracket. So that's the tax deferred accounts. Then you have tax free accounts, which are primarily Roth IRA and Roth 401k, where also things like HSAs are kind of a hybrid, health savings accounts, life insurance. If you have a whole life or a universal life insurance policy, can have some tax free characteristics where you're basically putting in money post tax. HSAs, I guess, are unique in that they get a pre-tax benefit and a tax-free withdrawal. So we'll talk about those later. But basically with Roths primarily, you're putting in money with money you've earnings you've already paid taxes on, but qualified withdrawals, assuming you're age 59 and a half or older, and in the case of a Roth IRA, you've opened it at least 5 years ago, all of the withdrawals are completely tax-free. Can be very valuable in managing income in higher tax years, especially later in retirement. And so you got the pre-tax or tax deferred, you've got the tax-free, and then it's the, let's call it after-tax or taxable brokerage accounts or savings, which is where you put in money that you've already been taxed on, and then you'll never be taxed again on the principal that you invest, but all of the earnings of it, either the growth of stocks or the dividends they pay or interest from bank savings, money market, CDs, bonds, those are all taxed in most cases at also ordinary income rates, although there's some preferred rates there as well. But basically those offer a bit of additional liquidity and flexibility as well. So kind of the idea, you know, although many people make predictions, just like with the stock market, no one knows for sure whether tax rates will increase or decrease over time. And so by having ideally a mix of those different assets, you can pull different income sources and allow yourself to kind of fill up lower tax brackets strategically, but it just gives you a lot more flexibility.
All right. So that's how I prepare for the taxes while I'm still working. Now I'm retired, and then what does one do? Because it sounds then that you prepare, but as you just said, but things change, you know. So obviously you want to be able to be flexible even in retirement.
Absolutely, yeah. And I would say that some of the rules even become a little bit more complex in retirement, because not only do you have sort of the tax bracket management on those different types of income sources that we just talked about, but you have things like Social Security taxation, Medicare premiums that increase. It's called IRMA, you know, based on higher incomes, you pay more in Medicare surtax, which is really just another form of taxes. And you've got like these couple years, Hank, last year and this year, you've got this enhanced senior bonus deduction, which can be really valuable, but there are phase outs as well. So, you know, the idea of where you want to source them is important. Fortunately, the tax rates on ordinary income are progressive. So it's not like every dollar is taxed at the highest bracket. So if you're in the 32% marginal tax bracket, you know, which is the top bracket, maybe your effective rate could only be, let's say, 20 to 25% because some of it, you know, the amount that's deductible, you're paying at zero. And then you kind of go up through the tiers at, you know, 10%, 12%, 22%, 24%. So that kind of drives it down. So you want to be able to be strategically look at what's your income today relative to how will it change as you're coordinating things like Social Security claiming, the timing of that, which we've talked about, pension income, you know, whether it's lump sum that you draw out from an account over time, or if you take a, you know, a monthly income, which, you know, the state and federal pensions are set up that way that it's a monthly paycheck, but also savings and after tax and Roths, you want to be able to coordinate those and be able to kind of project out as those different sources come in. Will that increase your income over time? Will it decrease? Because again, you can't predict what tax rates, you know, how those will change, but you can have a better visibility into how your income is going to change, which certainly impacts the tax brackets.
Yeah, interesting. This must be where then sort of a team approach comes in. So I have ClearPath Financial Partners. I have that piece of it as my financial advisor. But then I'm just thinking about the strategy, and here's how we're going to sort of smooth things out over the retirement years. But if I'm an accountant, I would think most accountants are trained to, I will get you every deduction I possibly can. And does that sometimes then you really have to explain, here's what I'm going for, here's what the financial plan is?
That's right. Exactly. Yeah. And those types of credits, or certainly credits and in some cases deductions, those, if they're on the table, and especially if they're sort of limited time, you know, offers, and they're only legislatively, you know, on the table for, say, a couple few years, generally you want to grab those when you can. But there are certain types, if you are itemizing your deductions because you're going above the standard, well, if you have certain qualifying deductions, but you know that you're in a lower income bracket this year, and all of a sudden, like, let's say you're between jobs, or you're, you know, you've retired, but you think you're going to go back and do some consulting or work part-time kind of as a encore career, then maybe you delay on some of those and push them into the following year. But generally you want to grab those when you can. It's more about where you're sourcing income from and controlling that lever of it. And so, yeah, it is a team approach, because what we'll do is to audit prior year returns and look at, okay, what was last year like for this client? Okay, what did they have for any sources, right? Different categories, Social Security income, IRA withdrawals, you know, investment income, dividends and interest. And then we'll look at this year, how is that likely to change? Maybe they sold a good bit of Procter & Gamble stock last year and took a capital gain on it, but this year we're not expecting as much. Well, we might say, you know what, based on last year, your target is about $20,000 less in income than it was in the prior year. So should we do something strategic like a Roth conversion, or take an additional withdrawal from an IRA at this point, even if you don't necessarily need it for income right now, but set it aside in after-tax investments or savings so that then the following year you can access that. And I think that's especially true, Hank, if someone's planning a large purchase, whether it's they want to help kids out like we've talked about with a down payment or a wedding cost, or they want to buy a bit, you know, of their dream vacation, you know, house on the lake. Well, if they're going to need to come up with several hundred thousand dollars, you generally don't want to take that all in one year, you know, and go from, let's say, you know, 150,000 of total income up to 450, because you had to take it all from an IRA. And in fact, you'd actually have to take more to get out the, let's say, 300,000, because you have to account for the taxes. And all of a sudden you go from a 12% to a 32% tax bracket. Well, that's not very smart. So if you know that, and that's sort of on the horizon, how do you get ahead of it? And can you create that liquidity sooner at a lower known tax rate today, and kind of prepay it, but when the deal is good?
Yeah, Ryan, tell us a little bit more about that. What else do people need to know? You're aiming for this tax flexibility in retirement, but you have to get the income that you need. How are they making sure they're getting that income they need?
Yeah, great question. So typically, Hank, for a lot of clients, especially if they have those different buckets and they have some in tax-free, some pre-tax, some taxable, it's usually a combination. You know, a lot of times clients think, like I just talked to a client last night that I've worked with for over a decade, and now the husband's retiring. Actually, Friday is his last day, and he's, you know, excited about that. But he was thinking, because we've talked about so many things leading up to this, he's like, all right, I'm going to go into my smart plan and I'm going to just start taking the, you know, X amount per month from that account. And that was just sort of the first thought, is like, let me take it from that source. But when we looked at it and we looked at the tax brackets relative to the other income that's going to come in, it made more sense in this case to, you know what, let's not take as much from there. Actually, let's take more from an inherited IRA that his wife received from her dad when he passed a few years ago, because the rules are such that that money all needs to come out within 10 years anyway, and it doesn't have much flexibility. So we're going to prioritize that source. And also because they'll be on the cusp of another tax bracket jump, we're going to take some of it from after-tax savings that they've already paid taxes on. But you don't want to sort of take it all from the pre-tax and, you know, not be aware of how the longevity of that account, you know, if you're going to spend it all down quickly. But you also don't, like some other clients, have a inclination to, you know what, I'm going to spend my savings down first, right? I've got a couple hundred grand in the bank in CDs. Like, I'm going to live on that and just not touch my IRA and 401k until I have to. Well, how that plays out is, which we tend to not let it play out like that, but if they do, then great. Now all of a sudden you have no liquidity, no, you know, bank liquid assets that are tax-free, and you're relegated to taking everything from those higher taxable accounts. So point is, Hank, that it's kind of pieced together strategically to optimize it.
Right. That makes perfect sense. You have to be thinking ahead, or as you just pointed out, you end up at some point, you sort of run out of time, I guess, where now I have to, in this year, get that big hit on my taxes as a opposed to smoothing it out over your retirement years. What else do people really have to be doing to get this kind of tax flexibility in their retirement? And it sounds as if it really never stops. So you really do have to begin to prepare. Am I sort of in that 3 to 5 year runway that you often talk about? Mm-hmm. That's when I'm starting to prepare for this. And then you have to keep it going in your retirement.
Absolutely. That's right. If you still have a few years left to go before retirement, that's great. At this point, here we are, 2026. Now the catch-up contributions to 401k plans and similar type of plans are required to go into Roth. So, and part of that's because the government wants their tax revenue today on that portion, but it also helps to almost force that creation of a tax-free bucket had you not had one. But if you're in those final years, and if you're in one of the top tiers, Hank, you know, in the 30 some odd percent, 32 to 37%, those higher brackets, it's kind of tough to forego the deduction today, because that plus the state, you know, could be 40% or so as a deduction. It's kind of bird in the hand. You sort of want to take that. But if you're in a lower to middle bracket, the 12% up to the 24% bracket, it very well may be a good move to forego additional deductions and prioritize your HSA, health savings account, or Roth 401k, Roth IRA, where you're going to get some tax-free income later, or even to build up an after-tax saving. We have clients where in a lot of cases, to put more into your retirement plan makes sense, right? It's a great forced savings vehicle, comes right out of paycheck. There's tax advantages, but there's some clients that I'm like, they've got a great retirement account, but they have very little in liquidity in the bank or in after-tax investments. So we might say, hey, let's pause on that a little bit and start to accrue some liquidity on the side over here so that we have that flexibility.
I am fascinated by this whole thought of really how you do have to continue to manage that retirement. I think a lot of people probably sort of think, well, I'm going to retire, and what I've got is my nest egg. That's what I've got, and that's a sort of it. But I think what you're really pointing out is that, no, you can really sort of manage that income that you have coming in. You can really make some smart decisions. I'm also a bit curious about, we get new administrations. Everybody's always talking about how they're going to help us and cut taxes or help us with our retirement savings. How much in your experience does it really change from year to year as our government is tinkering with the tax code?
You know, Hank, I would say it factors in quite a bit, actually. Yeah. And we're not even talking, you know, estate taxes at this point. That's a whole different conversation. But there were a lot of estate tax changes both on the federal level and in Massachusetts with that exemption raised from 1 million to 2 million. That was a big move. But even the extension of the 2017 Tax Cuts and Jobs Act created this more favorable tax environment where now, the brackets have widened as cost of living has increased over the last several years. There are these extra credits and deductions that are now on the table that weren't. So these are pretty, you know, again, I'm not predicting where tax rates will go from here, but historically, based on income, at least inflation adjusted over time, we're actually in a pretty favorable tax situation. It's fairly low. Again, not that anybody is like, hey, I feel like I'm paying too little in taxes. No one ever says that. But if we look at what the same purchasing power was 10 or 30 or 50 years ago, most people are paying a much lower average rate on every dollar of income these days. So we think it is fairly opportunistic to be considering those things. And that ties into planning decisions like Roth conversions, where you're, again, you know, accepting more income and sort of willingly paying a known rate today that you believe is fairly favorable to let things grow tax-free over time, to avoid RMDs, required minimum distributions, and to give yourself flexibility, not only if income needs change, things like a sick spouse, someone who needs care, lifestyle situations that dictate changes in need for income, but you're also cutting down on the future mandatory ordinary income through the required distributions as well.
Ryan, as we wrap up today, what else do people need to know when it comes to tax flexibility in retirement?
I'd say, Hank, the last one kind of big category is just the after-tax or taxable investments. There's a big difference between kind of ordinary interest income, things like CDs and typical taxable bonds, which are at your highest tax rate, versus qualified or preferred rate income, things like qualified dividends, things like municipal bonds that can pay a tax-free interest rate. And it's tempting to just sort of roll CDs or keep things in a high yield savings, but especially for those in a higher tax bracket, like if someone's in the 35% bracket, they can own Massachusetts municipal bonds that are paying a 3.5% yield, but because they're getting a deduction on the 35% federal plus the 5% state in Massachusetts, it's actually equivalent to a bond or a CD that was paying a 5.8% interest rate once it's all said and done. So you really need to not compare the yields yield to yield, but like what's the taxable equivalent? And in those same instances, bond interest at 35% versus stock dividends at 15% make a big difference in terms of what left in your pocket once Uncle Sam's done. So I think you want to consider those things, Hank. And a big one as well is just actively managed mutual funds in a taxable account that can spit off these big, really uncontrollable capital gain distributions can be kind of problematic. So you sort of want to minimize those, use more passive index-based investments that you can take losses on and that you can control the tax rates versus the mutual fund company doing so. So you really want to look at what's the net result of all of that. And again, I think the whole theme, Hank, is we want to minimize lifetime income taxes, which doesn't always equate to minimizing this year's taxes as much as possible.
Very good. Ryan, people want to get in touch with you, follow you, head to the website. What's the best way for them to do all that?
Feel free to give our office a call or you can go right online, clearpathfinancialpartners.com, and check us out. There's a lot of information on there and you can do a contact us kind of inquiry and we're happy to chat.
For Ryan Kittredge, president of clearpathoffinancialpartners.com, I'm Hank Stoltz. Thank you so much for joining us here on this episode of the podcast of Clearpath Financial Partners.